Amen. Thank you, Josh. This time the children are dismissed. If they would like to go to children's church, they're welcome to do so. You know, this is Thanksgiving weekend, right? And I got to know, how in the world did that guy get that picture of those turkeys on the screen there? Do you see that? It's like they're just standing there posed. It's quite remarkable. That's what happens when I go turkey hunting. They're all together like that, and I'm afraid of breaking the law by getting more than one. That's why I never get any. Okay. But I thought maybe this week it would be kind of fun for us to take a Thanksgiving quiz. Now, if you read forewords that you get in email, or if you read magazines or things like that, you know there's a lot of Thanksgiving quizzes out there. Quizzes like how many turkeys are eaten on Thanksgiving, and how many turkeys can dance on the head of a pin, you know, stuff like that. That's not the kind of quiz that I have for you today. I have just 10 easy questions. They're true or false, and I just want you to kind of think through them. Are these true or are they false about you? And I'll just run them by you here this morning. The first question is this. I follow Jesus' example and I give thanks for meals. That's a good question. Do you follow Jesus' example and give thanks for meals? And when I hear that, I'm like, oh yeah, I do that most of the time. But frankly, if I fix the sandwich and I'm walking through the kitchen eating it, sometimes I don't. Okay. Number two. When I sing songs to God, I am purposely thanking Him for His goodness to me. Okay, so as you're singing in the mornings, maybe or in your car or here in church, are you purposely thanking Him for the goodness that He's shown you? Here's number three. I have personally given thanks to God for His mercy this week. And when I think of that, the reason mercy is one of these questions is because you know that one of the Psalms says, give thanks to the Lord for He is good. And then a congregation answers, for His mercy endureth forever. For His mercy endureth forever. For His mercy endureth forever. Over and over and over again. Well, if they took the time to do that in a psalm, have I thanked God personally for His mercy this past week? Number four, I thank God for hard things that come into my life because of how He uses them to change my heart. Do you thank God for the hard things that come into your life? Because you know that He changes them. He uses them to change who you are. Number five, I thank God for my church family. Do you value your church family? Number six, when I place my tithes and offerings in the plate, I am expressing my thanks to God. Is that an act of thankfulness and worship? When you give your offerings. Number seven, I thank God that I can do things for Him. Or when you see someone passing around a nursery schedule or something like that, you say, oh, okay. Number eight, I give thanks because I know it pleases God. Number nine, when I catch myself being ungrateful, I apologize to God and thank Him for His grace. And finally, number 10, I am careful not to give thanks simply with my lips, but also with my heart. So how did you do on that true-false quiz? Did you answer all of them? I hope you got a perfect 10. You said, every one of those, that's me to the nth degree. And if that's you, that's fantastic. But whether that's you or not, I do want to talk to you this Thanksgiving weekend about the importance of being thankful. And I'd really like to share with you three characteristics of thankful people. And these characteristics are pretty universal if you think about them. And the first characteristic is this, that thankful people understand what it is to be without. Thankful people know what it is to go without things. Now, from time to time, my wife Laurel has gone with her mother to Vermont. And they've done this thing called country inns along the way. Some of you know about this, some of you don't. What they do is they travel up to Vermont and you go to the first bed and breakfast and you go in, they serve you dinner, you sleep there in the morning, they make you breakfast, they pack you a lunch, they put all of your belongings into your car and they drive it to the next bed and breakfast and you take your lunch and your walking cane and your camera and your sneakers and you go to the next bed and breakfast. You hike there in the mountains, the Green Mountains of Vermont. I love it that my wife does that with her mother-in-law because that means she doesn't do it with me. I'm not a hiker. If I'm going to take a hike, I'll have a weapon with me. That's my choice to go hunting instead. But I love it that she gets to do this also, because it's just a good thing for her to do. But I can remember the first time she did this. I'm not real domestic. And I was Mr. Mom at that time. And I can remember our kids were much smaller. And I can remember I not only had to do the dishes, I had to dry the dishes, and I had to put the dishes away. And I remember that I had to help the kids with their homework. And I remember that I had to vacuum, and I didn't think that was necessary, but the kids made a mess, so I had to vacuum. And I remember that I had to make sure that the kids had their clothes ready for school the next morning. And I remember that I had to do the laundry. I thought I could get by for a week, but it just wasn't working. I remember I had to cook. And I remember that I had to make the beds. Well, just that one night, I made the beds the next morning because she was coming home that day, you know? Right? I also remember that when she returned, I hugged her so tight, I about hugged the stuffing out of her. And she looked at me and she said, "Wow, that was a hug." And I said, "Man, I missed you. I am so thankful for the work that you do around here." And I had always thanked my wife for the things she does around the house to free me up to do some other things. I'm always grateful to her for that. But once I went without it, I had a whole different level of appreciation for her and for the things that she did. You see, thankful people understand what it means to be without for at least one of two reasons. The first reason they understand it is maybe they've actually gone without. Maybe they've actually experienced a time of lack. This was always the case with the people of the Great Depression, that those people who lived through the Great Depression had a profound sense of what it meant to be without. I buried one of them recently. An older woman, naturally, if she went through the Depression. Her name was Anne. And her son, after I did the funeral, her son sent to a number of people some pictures from her home. I want to show you Anne's refrigerator. Take a look at this baby. Do you see that? You may or may not recognize that's the Beta model of the General Electric refrigerator. That is the refrigerator that when Jesus turned the water into wine, they put it in that refrigerator. Okay? That's an ancient refrigerator. Maybe it came over on the Mayflower. I don't know. You think about Anne, and I didn't know her personally, but in speaking to those who did, I understood she was anything but stingy. And so she wasn't using this old antique refrigerator because she was cheap, but rather she knew what it was to be in want. And so she took care of the things that she had because she was thankful for what she had. And she showed her thankfulness, her appreciation by keeping it clean. Look inside that baby. I haven't seen a refrigerator that clean since we brought ours home from Sears, you know? Oh boy, I'm dead, huh? I don't think anyone has a refrigerator that clean except for Anne. You could eat out of that refrigerator. The reason she cared for it the way she did is because she was thankful for it. Now, going through a time of want or a time where you don't have important things can make you thankful, but it doesn't always make you thankful. You really have to choose to be thankful for the things that you have. You have to choose to appreciate the good things that God has placed in your life. It is not automatic that that happens. And so in your mind, you remember the times you were without, and you thank God for the things you have. But you don't have to go through the Great Depression to be thankful. There's another reason for this kind of thankfulness. Maybe people who are thankful have actually looked at other people who are in need and thought about what would that be like to go without. I'm not going to have you open your Bibles today. You're welcome to do so if you'd like. But I have, for your viewing convenience, I've placed the text on the screen this morning. And the first text I want to show you comes from Proverbs chapter 27. I'm sorry, chapter 28, verse 27. The author of Proverbs is writing, and he says this. He says, "He who gives to the poor will lack nothing." And that's true. You can't outgive God. He just blesses you when you give. But then he adds this, he who closes his eyes to the poor receives many curses. There's a truth that when you don't look at the needs of others, you miss a blessing. And you do sort of receive a curse. One of the things that happens is when you don't look at the needs of other people, when you only look at your own needs, you become a very selfish person. And you become a very trivial person. You become to others a very boring person. And you become an unthankful person. My mother taught her children to open their eyes to the world around them and the needs of other people around them. Although my mother never said as much, and because of her desire to honor her parents, she would disagree with me if she heard me say this. My mother was raised in poverty in Scotland. There was no question about it. She once told me that on occasion when they would come into the house and they would say, "I'm hungry, Mom," and there was no meat in the refrigerator. Well, there was no refrigerator. It was an icebox. Her mom would say, "It's rained recently," because it's Scotland. "It's rained recently. Go get some snails." And they would eat them just to fill their stomachs. She knew what it was like to go without. When she was 9 years old, her family moved from Scotland to America. And she said to me within the past couple years, she said, "Some of the people I admire most in the world are my dad and mom, because the reason they made that move was to give their kids hope and a better future." Uprooted it all and moved the whole family to Buffalo, New York. And although she lived in what you and I might consider to be the slums of Buffalo, New York, as an immigrant family might, they felt that they were extremely wealthy compared to what they had experienced in Scotland. Now, Mom experienced that, and very seldom did she ever speak about that in negative terms. I have had to put that information together on my own through the years to understand how she grew up, because she didn't want to cast her parents as individuals who were unable to care for their children. But she knew what it was like to be without, and she knew that Mary Jane and Glenn and David and Stephen Shields were clueless as to what it would be to be without. We never had experienced that. We grew up on a farm of 135 acres in Jefferson County, and there was meat on the table for every meal if you wanted it. Always food available. And knowing that her children had no idea what it was like to go without, Mary Shields would say over and over to us when we saw on television pictures of children in third world countries, if we flipped through National Geographic and saw those pictures of the children who their bellies are distended with illness, with worms. And when we saw, a missionary would come and he'd show us pictures and you could just count the ribs on the people from Indonesia. And my mom would say this sentence to us over and over again, "You are so unbearably blessed that you were born in the United States of America. Be thankful for that." And so what Mom was doing was she was saying, don't close, do you see it? The second part of verse 28, "He who closes his eyes to them receives many curses." Do not close your eyes to the needs around you, because you cannot be a thankful person if you close your eyes to the needs of people around you. So this Thanksgiving, it's coming up here. I'm asking you to remember what it is, either from your own experience or from the experience of others, to go without. Thankful people do that. A second characteristic of thankful people is that they are not just thankful for the good times, they're thankful for the bad times. As you mature, you begin to realize this more and more. It was at age 75 that British journalist Malcolm Muggeridge said this. And I put it on the screen so that you can read it. Follow along as I read it out loud. He said, "Contrary to what might be expected, I look back on experiences that at the time seemed especially desolating and painful with particular satisfaction. Indeed, I can say with complete truthfulness that everything I have learned in my 75 years in this world, everything that has truly enhanced and enlightened my experience, has been learned through affliction and not through happiness. Wow. Now, adopting that sentiment will require for many of us an adjustment in our paradigm. We're going to have to rethink kind of our worldview and our perspective, and we're going to have a paradigm shift where we realize that if we make it our goal to be pleasure seekers, if we make it our goal to make ourselves happy, if we follow the counsel of that great philosopher, Bachman-Turner Overdrive, and if we say, I'm looking out for number one, if that is our viewpoint, that the most important thing is to avoid pain, we'll never understand what Muggeridge is speaking about. And we will not be thankful people. Jesus promised pain. And the clearest place he did it was in John 16:33. There he's speaking to the 12. And the text is on the screen before you here. I will recite it to you from the King James because I had a teacher who taught this verse to us when we were small children in the Alliance Church where I grew up. These things, Jesus says, these things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. Most of us don't have any trouble understanding the be of good cheer. Jesus is going to win in the end, but we want to gloss over. We want to skip over the reality that in this world you will have trouble. Some people want to say, well, that's for the disciples and they lived in a hard time, but we don't have that today. Praise the Lord, if we trust him, we'll always have the victory and get the big car and the big house. And you tell that to the Christians in Sudan. It doesn't work. In the world, you will have tribulation. It's the truth. If you do not understand this, and if you're not willing to accept this, you will be prone not only to be unthankful, but to even give up. Have you seen people who have given up? You know, maybe you know someone who gave up on their marriage, or gave up on college, or gave up on parenting, or even gave up on attending church. And frequently, the reason such people give up on those things is because they have an inadequate view of suffering. They don't say it. But the fact is that they felt like things should have been a little easier. They felt like marriage should have been a little bit more like it is in the romance novels. They felt like college should have been more like it is in the movies. And they felt like parenting should be more like it was when they had that little doll baby. And they felt like, yeah, that's funny, isn't it? Parents just laughed out loud. How about it, Matt, with the twins? It's just like when you played with dolls when you were little, isn't it? That was a no-win question, huh? And they felt like church would be a place where no one would ever disagree with them or view things differently. And they gave up because they wanted to avoid pain at all costs. Even pagans know what Jesus is saying here. Even unregenerate people know that there is a great deal of pain in life, and when you avoid it, it's unhealthy. Carl Jung was a psychiatrist of the last century. That feels weird, doesn't it? And Jung said this. He said, neurosis is always a substitute for legitimate suffering. Wow. Wow. When you have a paradigm that your life should be trouble-free, you are bound to crash, maybe not into neurosis, but at least into thanklessness. And you will not be a thankful person. The real requirement, the paradigm change that you need to make, is one that includes a willingness to embrace suffering. I've told this story in small groups. I've told it from the pulpit. I tell it again and again because it so influenced me in 1996. You know, one of the most impressive moments in all of sports did not occur on the football field. It did not occur on the basketball court. It did not occur on a baseball diamond did not even occur in the ice of a hockey rink. One of the most impressive moments in sports occurred in 1996 when injured Carrie Strug went out onto the gymnastic mat and assured the U.S. women's gymnastic team of a gold medal. You see, Carrie had been injured badly in her previous jump. She didn't know, but it felt like her ankle was broken. She could barely walk, and she limped as she walked from that last jump, and she limped as she ran toward that vault. Before that, she said to her coach, "Do you need this? Do we need me to jump?" And her coach says, "Yeah." She's looking at the scores, which the athletes don't do. You know, she's focused on what she's going to do. But the coach knew that we were ahead of the Russians, but only by 0.8 of a point. And so the coach says to her, "Carrie, we need you one more time. We need you one more time for the gold. You can do it. You better do it." And she did. In great pain, she ran toward that vault. And she hit that vault, and she did all those twirls through the air that just blow my mind. And she landed on 1 foot upright. And she hopped on that foot and turned to face the judges. And then she collapsed in agony. Who collapsed in agony? An 18-year-old Olympic gold medalist who was not afraid to embrace suffering. And I am sure she is a thankful person for her willingness to do that. What's your view on suffering? How do you see suffering? You know, the Apostle Paul's writing to a young man, a young Christian, who's in leadership in the church, and he says to him in 2 Timothy 2:3, he says, "Endure hardship with us like a good soldier of Christ." Wow. Be ready to suffer. Sometimes you hear sports people, you know, on ESPN or on ESPN radio or something else, and they'll be interviewing a football player or another athlete, and that other athlete is, he'll stand there and he'll say, "We're soldiers. That's what we are. We go out on that field and we're soldiers." And every now and then when I hear that, I just want to say, "No, you're not. No, you're not." Josh prayed this morning, and he prayed about our soldiers because they're there and we're here, and they face something that we don't have to face. But the Apostle Paul knew what a soldier was. He was in occupied territory, and when he looked at us as Christians, he said, "You need to be willing to suffer as much as if you were in Afghanistan. You need to embrace suffering, because if you do not do it, you will not be a thankful person." But when you do that, embracing suffering is really a characteristic of thankfulness. A third characteristic of thankful person is this: genuinely thankful people are open-handed. They're not closed-handed, they're open-handed. I watched something on TV this week. I finally watched it. I've been feeling like I ought to, and I didn't want to because I tend to have this personality trait. It's that show, is it on Learning Channel or Discovery? Hoarders. Are you familiar with that show? I watched that show, and within a couple days, I took 17 broken computers out of my basement to recycle. Yeah, somebody clapped. Don't do that. My wife doesn't need any more encouragement. Listen, on that show, they really show the dysfunction of the hoarder. It's dramatically portrayed, and you can see, I don't have the problems that they have on that show. You can see the people on that show really have a disorder, a deep disorder. The producers show also the danger of hoarding from the perspective of someone who is living in a fire trap or in a place that's just filthy. So they cover those dangers, they cover the disorder, but there's a whole side to casual hoarding, which is what I have. There's a whole side to that that they don't address. A much more common side that I'm guessing that you have struggled with from time to time. And it's that aspect of human personality that says, I'm keeping this, I'm not going to give it to you. How much do you need? I need it all. Really? And you hear it sometimes when you hear someone say, and I've heard people say this through my years of ministry, how much is enough to give to God? Should I give the 10% in the offering? I can afford to give more than that. Should I give 20? How much is enough? I just want to give enough. And when I say that, when I hear that, I understand that there's really not an open-handedness there. And when you have a closed-fistedness on the things that God has entrusted to you, it is very difficult to be thankful because you're so busy hanging on to what you have. The Bible instructs us over and over again that everything we have really belongs to God. And the Bible instructs us as well to be open-handed with it. In Galatians, Paul encourages the people in Galatians 6:10, he says, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong to the family of believers. Don't be closed-fisted. John is a lot more directive about it. In John chapter 3, in 1 John chapter 3, in verse 17, he says this, if anyone has material possessions, sees his brother in need, but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? You see, open-handedness is something that we're supposed to exhibit just as Christians. And I would say to you that if you're not exhibiting that, you cannot have a depth of thankfulness in your heart. You know, when I was in college, my pastor and his wife epitomized this open-handedness. Jim and Jeannie lived right next door to us, and he pastored our church. And on the other side was another couple that lived. They had a kid, and Laurel and I were married without kids, and we were dinks at that time. You ever heard that phrase, dink? Double income, no kids. That was us, you know? We weren't wealthy at all, but we were better off than those people because they had children and single income sometimes. And my pastor and his wife, well, let me tell you a little bit about them. Jim pastored a church full of college students. I just want to say this about college students. They're great. I think I love ministering to college students as much as I love any other kind of ministry. But they don't have any money at all. I was the treasurer of that church. And I knew it was pathetic what we paid Jim. It was pathetic what we paid Pastor Jim. So he had another job. He was bivocational. And this other job that he had paid him the Georgia minimum wage, which was less than the Pennsylvania minimum wage way back then. On top of that, Jim had a wife who was in college. I don't know if you know this about college. I'll just clear it up for you. It's expensive. Okay? On top of that, Jim and Jeannie had a beautiful baby daughter. I don't know if you know this about children. I'll just clear it up for you. They are expensive. On top of that, Jim drove a rusty old Datsun B210. And I don't know if you know this about rusty old Datsun B210s, but on Jim's at least, if you looked down, you could watch the highway passing under your feet because there was no state inspection in Georgia. And so there he goes. Well, one day, and we were good friends with Jim and Jeannie. One day, Jeannie came running over and she said, Laurel, Laurel, and I happened to be in the room. And Laurel said, what? And Jeannie's crying. She said, my grandmother sent us $1,000. This is a check for $1,000, which was a lot of money in 1983. Look at this. It's $1,000. And I looked up and said, wow, that's great, because you guys need a new car real bad or a different car real bad. Are you going to get a car with that? And Jim was there, and Jim said, I don't know. We need to pray about why God gave us this money. I know why God gave you this money. Because you need a better car, dummy. Didn't call him dummy because you shouldn't call your pastor a dummy. But the thought crossed through my mind. You know? And so he and Jeannie prayed about what to do with that money. And they passed right over my apartment and blessed the other people over there with it. And it was a good thing. And they were delighted to be able to do so because they were open-handed people and they were thankful people. Open-handed people are thankful people. Open-handed people get a blessing that belongs only to them. Now, I need to share just a couple clarifiers with you here. And one of the clarifiers is this. Open-handed people are not careless with the way they give. You know, in a ministerial association, we give away tens of thousands of dollars. We never hand people money. Cash? I can't do that. Because I need to know that that person is going to spend that not on booze, not on drugs, but actually on the heat bill. We never even write them a check with their name on it, but we write the check out to the heating company. That's not being closed-handed. That is being open-handed in a very disciplined and careful way. And it's a wise way to be open-handed. Laurel and I have made the mistake through years of ministry of giving people money and seeing them use it carelessly. So open-handed people, this is just kind of a clarifier, they're not careless, but note this, they're not stingy. And I feel that if most Christians err one way or the other, they don't err toward carelessness, but we err toward stinginess. And we say, I don't know if I want to give that. I don't know if I want to give that because I don't know if it'll be used right. And we keep it. Thinking it's used right then? Thankful people are open-handed people. So let me ask you, are you an open-handed person? Let me ask you more broadly, are you a thankful person? Does your life fit these characteristics that we've observed today? Do you know what it is to be without? Some of you might know that just because you've grown up in hard times. All of us should know that because we live in a world where we can see poverty, not just overseas, but even in our own backyard. Do you know what it is to be without, and do you therefore see how well you've been blessed and have a heart of thankfulness as a result? And second, are you choosing to value the struggles that come into your life? Or are you operating from a paradigm that says, man, if God loves me, then I won't have any problems, and if I just have enough faith, then I won't have any troubles? Or are you saying, there are times that I understand exactly what Jesus means. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. Are you embracing that tribulation for the richness that it can bring into your life? And third, are you choosing to be open-handed with the things you have? I'm going to ask the musicians if they'll come, and I'm going to ask you, to this Thanksgiving, do each of these things. First, look at what God has given you and give thanks to Him. And second, look at what you've suffered over the past year. And rather than cursing the suffering you've experienced, try to find something redemptive in it that you can give thanks to God for. And third, take a look at those around you. And don't just give thanks. Give. Let's conclude our time by worshiping Him in song.